This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What is up, everybody? I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to this Monday edition of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Talk about waking up to a ton of news. Holy cow. We're going to get to all of it, including the news that's been breaking over the last hour or two about a 26-year-old Luigi Mangione, who is the suspect that has been arrested in the killing of the United Healthcare CEO. I'm going to get into some of the evidence that police have seized from Mr. Mangione. We're going to talk about all that. We're going to get to, holy cow, Bashar al-Assad gone. A 10-day push by the rebel forces in Syria resulting in the fall of a nearly 50-year-old totalitarian regime that deployed chemical weapons against its own people. We're going to talk about all of that. I also have a great guest joining me today. Two of them, in fact. I've got Kate Smith. She is the director of the LGBTQI Plus Policy Center at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to talk about the oral arguments last week in the Scrimeti case. She is joining me again at 2:30, bottom of this hour, and at 3:30, it is Overtime with Dom Salvia. My little buddy is going to be joining me. We are going to talk in detail about Donald Trump's mystifying interview on NBC yesterday morning. I guess that's the only way I can say it. I have listened to the whole thing a couple of times, y'all. And yes, the press has covered a lot of specific substantive topics, but there's a couple of hot takes from yours truly that you're not going to want to miss. I'm going to start that discussion at the top of the hour. But we have, of course, here at Civic Media, kicked off our grown-up gift list text to win sweepstakes contest today. I hope you have been participating. In the 7, 11, 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. hours, we will drop a word of the hour on you. You text that in, you will either win $100 or maybe a little overnight stay at the Chula Vista Resort in Wisconsin Dells. You got to text in via the app, everybody. So go get that app. It's free from wherever you find your apps. And then, of course, we're going to choose one grand prize winner at the end of the sweepstakes contest. Super cool. You can check out all the details and the rules at civicmedia.us/grownupgiftlist. I wish I could participate, Cardi, but we sadly, being employed here, we cannot do so. But I do want to give all of you the breaking news just coming out over the last couple of hours that, again, Luigi Mangione has been arrested in Altoona, Pennsylvania. He is the person of interest, a suspect. My word, that word has not yet been used by either New York City police or Altoona, Pennsylvania police. Here's the question that I want to ask all of you. It's a couple of questions. The first question is, how do you feel about this? There was apparently a 3-page handwritten manifesto that police have gotten their hands on, written by Mr. Mangione. The accounts that I've heard so far, it hasn't been released, is that it is anti-corporate. I'm not surprised by that anti-corporateness. But how does Mr. Mangione's arrest as a person of interest in the killing last Wednesday at 6:45 a.m. Eastern Time of United Healthcare CEO, what was your gut feeling when that occurred? And I'd also, here's the bigger question that I want to ask. And this ties into the Trump interview today, because we watched Mr. Mangione, if it is indeed he, allegedly shoot somebody down with intentionality, with planning, meticulous planning, with an agenda. We watched someone commit intentional homicide, right? We've all seen the videos. We have watched a national law enforcement apparatus and media apparatus respond to this. If you're on social media, you've probably seen lots of posts about this. So all of this incredible attention. And again, watching someone commit a crime on video. And Mr. Mangione, due to a very aware customer or employee at a McDonald's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. This is how police arrested Mr. Mangione. Someone either eating or working at a McDonald's thought, this dude looks a little bit like those photographs of this guy, and he's acting weird. And they called it into the Altoona police. The old, if you see something, say something. But here's what I'd like to ask you. We have watched people commit crimes on videotape before. Okay. We watched people commit crimes on January 6th, 2021. And even if the people on January 6th, 2021 genuinely believed that Donald Trump had won the election, which he did not, they nonetheless broke the law. They nearly killed Officer Daniel Hodges, who's been a guest on my show twice. They engaged in illegal trespass. They damaged governmental property. They threatened law enforcement agents. We watched that happen. We have video of these people doing it. And yet, as confirmed by Donald Trump during his interview yesterday on NBC, it seems that the president of the United States is poised to pardon some of these people. So, an angry mob of mostly white people committed a whole lot of crimes on January 6, 2021. Donald Trump's looking to pardon some of them. A very rich white guy CEO gets shot down in Midtown New York City. We find the killer. It brings to mind for me some of the other crimes that we have witnessed on videotape that we have not found our way to justice as a society. And I was born in 1977, so I watched what happened to Rodney King. And I remember the day a jury acquitted the police officers who nearly beat Mr. King on videotape to death. So what does justice mean to you in this country? Because once you get past all the partisan rancor and all of these claims about political bias and law enforcement, I'll tell you what I see. I see different rules for rich and powerful people. And then I see rules for everybody else. And heaven help you, if you are not rich and powerful and you are a black or brown person in this country. Because Rodney King, he didn't get any justice. LA erupted into rioting after that. OJ Simpson, rich and powerful guy, he got the big acquittal. So I feel really in this very bizarre place as I watch our national response to this CEO's murder. And in the same breath, Daniel Penny, a former Marine who choked a man to death on the New York subway, has just been acquitted. That was on tape too. Where do we draw the line? What does justice actually look like in the United States? Do you feel like the system is fair? Because the thing that we can talk about the Hunter Biden pardon too. And I'm going to go through one of the, at least some of the evidence that they've collected off of Mr. Mangiano. And I also want to tell you what I think is going to legally end up being like the big argument in his criminal case. But do you feel like our legal system actually gets us to anything close to justice in this country? Because I don't know. I'm looking around and it doesn't feel that way to me. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And I'm a lawyer. And here's the thing. And there's a lot of arguments about the Hunter Biden pardon. But I'm going to make this one again and again and again and again. And that is, if we're all looking around going, what would be totally unfair to punish or imprison Hunter Biden because nobody gets charged like he did. If that's true, then why the hell is the penalty what it is for the crimes with which Hunter Biden was charged? If that's so unfair, then why the hell does the federal criminal code say that these are the appropriate penalties for that crime? Might it be that we have a long history of effectively operating our criminal justice system via extortion? And that means if you're poor and you don't have access and power, prosecutors will charge every conceivable thing under the books. Whether or not that makes sense from a justice perspective, and they will do that to extort pleas. And in fact, Donald Trump made that very argument on NBC this past weekend. So where are you in this argument? Because it's a bizarre moment. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. My name's Maggie Dawn. You got Cardi on the board. If you give him a call, be sure you say hello. We're going to take your thoughts when we come back after these brief messages right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
For a while there, it was rough. What is up, everybody? Happy Monday, y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where we're all about real news and great conversation. And certainly, folks, we got a lot of real news happening this Monday. Join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I'm talking about the arrest of a man by the name of Luigi Mangiano. He's 26 years old, Baltimore native, went to college in Pennsylvania, apparently has also lived in Hawaii. Such an interesting moment. He's on videotape. There's full weight of U.S. law enforcement. The justice system is going to be brought to bear on Mr. Mangiano, because we watched him commit the crime on videotape. That's happened before in our country. And I think some people could make an argument that justice hasn't always been meted out fairly, that Lady Justice isn't blind, that we do have two systems here. One for poor folks, and I won't even say poor. Let's just say like people that don't have $1 million to spend on lawyers, right? People that don't have incredible access or incredible influence over the legal system. So what do you all think about this? It's an interesting moment. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Mr. Mangiano was arrested based on a tip from either an employee or someone eating at a McDonald's. Michaela from West Bend pointing out on the text line, gee whiz, I hope they never make that person's name public. Yikes. I would tend to agree. There had been reporting I had seen on Friday and over the weekend that law enforcement was somewhat frustrated by the fact that they weren't getting as much public assistance and tips as they have in the past. Because apparently this guy, there's a 3-page handwritten manifesto, very anti-corporate. Remember the shell casing said, deny, defend, depose, meaning deny the insurance claim, defend the lawsuit when the insured sues, and then depose the insured, fighting coverage all the way. Here are some more facts. He was found with a fake ID in the name of Mark Rosario. That name was used to register at the hostel that he stayed at for 10 days in New York City. He used a different fake ID with the same last name, Mark Rosario, again, to check into that hostel. Let's see what else. He had a gun and a silencer on him. It is a ghost gun. These are guns assembled by a person at home. They're not registered anywhere. So it looks like there's quite a lot of evidence. Interesting side note, I heard reports that he may be related to a Maryland lawmaker. Fascinating. So that's what's going on there. Here's my take, and then I'm going to go to the phones. And the text lines are open, y'all. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. So what occurred in the McDonald's, based on the tip, is what is called a Terry stop in policing. Now, I bet unless you've been subject to a Terry stop or you're a lawyer, you probably don't know what the hell that is. A Terry stop is one of the most controversial elements of policing. It is called a Terry stop based on a U.S. Supreme Court case from years ago, Terry versus Ohio. And in it, what the Supreme Court said was that if law enforcement can articulate a reasonable suspicion, you can be stopped and patted down over your clothes. The rationale for the pat down in the Terry stop is that since police have detained you in order to keep yourself from hurting the cop or cops or hurting yourself, police can pat you down, again, only on top of your clothes. Like, they can't stick their hands into your pockets. Now, if they find something that police will say that based on my years of experience felt like drugs or a weapon or a syringe, then they can go into your pockets, because that then has gone from reasonable suspicion to probable cause, and therefore you could be arrested and or detained depending on what the PC itself is. The entire interaction with Mr. Mangiano that occurred at this McDonald's based off of a layperson's maybe ID is going to come down to exactly what transpired in what was most certainly a Terry stop. So I will guarantee you now, I love making predictions on the radio, that this guy's entire defense is going to basically hinge on the legality of the Terry stop. Because if the Terry stop was illegal, then you don't have the gun or the silencer, and then you probably don't have the manifesto, you don't have the fake ID, etc., etc., etc. And why have Terry stops been super controversial? And this gets back to my broader point about, like, what do we think of the state of the justice system in the United States? They're controversial because a reasonable suspicion, well, reasonable to whom? And by the way, most cops I know, can look at pretty much anybody doing anything and come up with some rationale for why that looks slightly suspicious under any given set of circumstances. So it's complicated, y'all. Let's go to the phones. Karina from Milwaukee, what do you think? Do we have a justice system or do we have a legal system that we think might on occasion mete out some justice?
Well, obviously, the more you can pay, the more wiggle room you'll have. Because as you said, you know, if you're going to get a public defender, and they have a million cases in their hands, and you know, that it is what it is. My thing is that we truly have to look into the situation. Why is it happening? Because coming from the healthcare, I know this man who was killed. Obviously, you shouldn't go around and kill people, but up here, I would believe that.
Karina, we're going to have to leave it there. I got to take care of some business. We're going to pick up the conversation a little bit later in the show. Up next, we've got my next guest from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to talk about the LGBTQIA decision that came down, or argument that occurred last week, Wednesday, before the Supreme Court. So y'all keep it locked. We're going to come right back after your farm update right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Oh, I hope I don't lose you. Please.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Baby, can't you see? Welcome back, everybody. I am Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, from state to local news, entertainment, sports, and weather, Civic has you covered. We've got our daily news roundup podcast that gives you what you need to know in your community. Head over to your local Civic Media station's website, like WAUK.com in Waukesha and Milwaukee area, which is where I broadcast from, and get signed up for your daily news roundup podcast. It'll be delivered right to you. I've got a great guest, and I have her on in just one sec, but I wanted to give Mark from Prairie du Sac a brief moment to comment. Mark, if you can keep it quick, do we have a justice system or do we have a legal system that sometimes tries to get to justice?
Well, under our Constitution, it's interesting. I was just looking it up. Under the preamble, one of the first things they said after we created more perfect union is establish justice. And one of our beefs in the Declaration of Independence is that we wanted to have justice in this country. And I don't know whether we do or not. I mean, I've heard, you know, they want to compare the protesters on January 6th to those the Black Lives Matter protests. They say, I've heard people, you know, throw out, well, they, you know, caused $11 billion in damage, and that's not true. I don't know. I mean, it is just, we have to do something a little different because it just seems like there's not impartial justice being doled out.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. And speaking of that potentially impartial justice and impartial protection of our rights and freedoms under the law, I am very happy to bring on Kate Smith. She is the director of the LGBTQI plus policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Kate, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for making time. We're here to talk about the Supreme Court oral arguments that occurred last Wednesday. This is in the Scrimeti case that deals with gender-affirming care for minors. A complete and total ban in the state of Tennessee eventually made its way up to the Supreme Court. I mentioned this on Thursday last week One of the interesting things is that the question of the parental right to determine health care for children was not taken up by the Supreme Court, which, Kate, I just find fascinating in this greater sort of environment where we hear a lot of vitriol about parental rights to make sure that they can do what they think is best for kids. But the Supreme Court didn't go there here. Interesting. Set the stage for us more, Kate. What's at stake in this decision or this case that's now before the Supreme Court for decision, which we'll get before the end of the term, which occurs in July, term ends in July. What do you expect? How did you think the oral arguments went? I'm curious because I listened as well and I was concerned.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good way to put it. So what's at stake here is whether young people and their families are able to access best practice medical care. We currently have about 24 states that have some sort of ban or restriction on transgender medical care for young people on the books that have passed in their states, Tennessee being one of them. And as you pointed out, this case was really about equal protection and whether a ban on transgender medical care violates the Equal Protection Clause. And some other lawsuits that are challenging many of these other bans also talk about this issue of parents' rights and the ability of parents to be able to make decisions for their families and the right to direct their medical care as well. So it's a really high-stakes case because we know that this type of care is really life-saving and that when young people need it and they're able to access it, it really drastically improves their mental health. It decreases suicidality. It decreases depression and anxiety and really increases positive outcomes for young people. So it's going to be hugely important. And we'll have to see, like you said, in later next year, how the court rules. I really heard some great things. I heard some concerning things in the arguments. Obviously, there's so many folks who are trying to go through and figure out exactly how might the justices in the Supreme Court land. I think we heard some really sound acknowledgement that this care is really helpful and beneficial for at least some youth. I think there was disagreement among the justices about the benefit of the care and how much benefit this care has and whether there is harm in the potential provision of this care. I think the folks arguing on behalf of families made a really good case to show that it's important that doctors are able to have access and make those decisions about whether this care is useful for their patients rather than judges or legislators. So we'll have to see how it goes from there.
One of the things, Kate, that I found really challenging about the framework for this appeal is that in large part, the outcome may be determined by what level of scrutiny the justices apply to this case. And again, folks, talked about this for over an hour, I think, last week. So you can check those shows out at civicmedia.us/shows/Maggie Dawn Show. But quick refresher, strict scrutiny, you're usually going to find a law overturned as being unconstitutional because government has to articulate a compelling government reason for the restriction that impedes upon usually protected classifications, not just the compelling government interest, but that the law is narrowly tailored to serve that. There's intermediate scrutiny, often what is used to review laws that per se discriminate on a gender basis. And then, of course, you have rational basis scrutiny, which is usually a green light and the law is going to be upheld. The thing that raised my eyebrows the most was the suggestion by Justice Thomas that this is not gender discrimination, that this is age discrimination. And that is going to set up, I think, what has to be an ideological battle of some sort on the court itself, because they have a prior decision written by Justice Gorsuch where he says any set of laws or employment, in that case, employment practices that treat people that are transgendered differently than cisgendered people is, of course, per se gender discrimination. And yet here you have Thomas saying, oh, no, it's not that. It's age discrimination. And the reason I find that so troubling and also absurdist in its conception is that all of the care that is at issue, or the core elements of healthcare that are at issue there, are completely legal for cisgendered children. Any parent can go get those things if their child is cisgendered, including breast augmentation, hormone therapy, or any number of things. But if your child is transgender, then it's illegal, which to me, again, if it's got feathers, it quacks and has webbed feet, it's a freaking duck. It's gender discrimination, which to me, again, leads to that intermediate scrutiny level, which would seem to at least require some rigor from the Supreme Court. Kate, what's your take on that? Because, again, even the suggestion by Thomas that, oh, we'll just call it something else is alarming to me.
Yeah, it's the discussion around level of scrutiny is really interesting. And I think it's important to note that the ACLU and Chief Strangio, who is the first out trans lawyer to argue before the Supreme Court, does maintain that this law is still unconstitutional, even under rational scrutiny. So there's some different, I think, schools of thought about whether this holds up in any level of scrutiny. However, as you're saying, right, a heightened level of scrutiny would mean this is even more unlikely to hold up under, for example, intermediate scrutiny. It's really wild to try to say that this is not gender discrimination. We know that puberty blockers and hormone replacement therapy, which, just as an aside, young people are not accessing permanent or difficult to reverse types of gender affirming care when they're very young, right? The first real medical intervention happens usually around when puberty, when you start seeing signs of puberty, and then maybe you start puberty blockers, which are fully reversible and can be stopped at any time.
And if we can, Kate, let's just re-emphasize that point, because I think this has been so sensationalized as a scare tactic. The idea that your kid could go to school and come back a different job. This is not what happens if you don't know what the course of best practice gender-affirming care is for minors. It does not include surgical intervention within the first interactions. It takes years, and there is lots of therapy and all, and I mean, both psychotherapy to make sure that the child... Anyways, it is an extensive, long, and oftentimes difficult, grueling process for any physician to get to the place where they're going to say, yep, I'm going to prescribe puberty blockers or hormone therapy, all of those things. There are all of these incremental steps. It is a very, very, very long, 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 long process. Sorry for the digression, Kate, but extremely important that people understand that.
That gender-affirming care needs to...
Hey, Kate, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Cardi, are you hearing that as well? Why don't you...
Yeah, I'm trying to adjust the audio right now.
Exit and come back in, Kate. Let's try... Wait, let's try you now. Let's see how you're doing.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yep. Oh, there you are. Back in full volume. No problem.
Okay.
But anyways, go ahead.
The idea, or there's this misconception, right, that we're handing out surgeries to kids all over the place. And in reality, it's extremely rare. And the idea of gender affirming care for young people really is actually built to give families as much time as possible to determine the best course of treatment before considering more permanent changes. And to note, puberty is a permanent change. So when we require young people to go through a puberty that does not match their gender identity, that's also permanent, right? So ensuring that folks have access to puberty blockers allows them more time to make those types of decisions.
So critically important. Again, a lot of misinformation out there. So what are the potential outcomes from this case, Kate? And what does this mean for Wisconsin families?
Yeah, so there's one option where the Supreme Court says, yes, this law is absolutely unconstitutional. Maybe they apply that heightened level of scrutiny and effectively nullify this ban that could have ramifications for the around 24 states that also have bans on this care in place. They could return the case back down to a lower court with recommendation that the lower court assess it with that heightened level of scrutiny. Again, this case is unlikely to hold up to a heightened level of scrutiny. Or they could say that rational scrutiny is the most appropriate and say that they believe that this case or this law is constitutional under rational scrutiny. And in that case, then there are other lawsuits happening that maybe we'll see some other angles about discussing the unconstitutionality of banning this type of care. In Wisconsin, I know in 2023, Governor Evers vetoed a ban on trans medical care for young people. And so it's totally possible, right, in 2025 that we see the state legislature discuss this issue again, and we could see it move through the legislature again. So this case will have certainly really big ramifications there. And this case could have ramifications for everybody's access to care. If states are able to decide that some folks can have access to the same level of care and other folks cannot, then we're talking about things like birth control, reproductive care, and other forms of medical care that have had attempts to legislate in the past. So this really is about all of us and our access to best practice care.
Folks, that is Kate Smith. She is the director of LGBTQIA policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. I'm going to be back with more with her. We're going to discuss some of the insinuations from some of the members on the court that, well, Europe's pulling back and that makes this ban totally fine, and why that's actually very, very misleading. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My guest this half hour is Kate Smith. She's the director of the LGBTQI plus policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Thank you for making time, Kate. I really appreciate it. One of the things that I hear get thrown about England and Sweden and Finland are restricting gender affirming care. And the first point there is, I don't know if I would use the word restrict. What they're doing is exploring additional scientific research. They're trying to increase the body of scientific understanding and studies, because there's been some, but not as much as I think anybody would like, especially longitudinal, or that's the fancy speak for very long-term studies. But what is really disingenuous about that argument, in my opinion, Kate, is that nowhere in countries that have addressed this that are analogous in government structure to the United States have banned all forms of gender-affirming care for all transgender minors, no matter what. Like, that's what Tennessee's ban is. That's what most of the state bans here in these United States have done. And that is in no way, shape, or form analogous to what has happened in other Western European countries. And second of all, I've really never heard the Kavanaughs at all invoke European gun regulations as a justification for restrictive gun laws or any gun regulation here. They don't seem to be at all interested in what's happening in Western Europe on that front. It just seems really disingenuous. Your response to these kinds of arguments. Can you turn Kate on, Cardi? Hang on 1 second, Kate. We'll get you there. Sure. No worries. There you go, my friend.
Sure. So this comes up often from folks who are trying to find some piece of evidence to justify banning this care. And this often comes up when we discuss the fact that every major medical association in the United States supports access to gender-affirming care for young people. And sure, there are countries that are, like you said, looking into further studies. We can also find countries that have really expansive gender-affirming care policies outside of the U.S. for young people. So to kind of cherry pick some countries that, by the way, I'm certainly don't know very many people who are comparative political experts in both countries to be able to say the difference in what their courts do versus ours and how that interacts with their medical bodies. So I think we actually have a host of really great experts and information here, and also the young people that are at risk here in the United States that we can listen to and look to for good expert information on gender-affirming care.
I can't imagine anything that would impact my mental health more greatly than feeling completely alien in my own body or that it wasn't mine. I cannot envision anything. I cannot imagine that feeling. I cannot imagine how impactful that would be, especially for a young person. And this idea of individual identity and our rights to pursue that in this country, sometimes I think with blind fidelity often to how our individual choices may impact other people. Here, this is a choice that doesn't impact anyone else. This is a choice that is only impacting that family, that individual child. Again, there is a massive continuum of care. You don't pass go and go directly to the most extreme interventions. The idea that in certain circumstances, we simply forget or seem enchanted by the idea that some people's beliefs can be imposed on others at the expense of someone's individual choices that only impact themselves, unlike so many others, seems so contrary to some of our most closely held principles and values. What are your thoughts, Kate?
Yeah, I think the panic that I know many feel as parents and people who have young loved ones in their lives when they think about dysphoria and the potential impacts of dysphoria, I can really empathize with folks who want to pretend that young people can't experience that. Mm. Because it's so scary to think about, like you said, living in a body that doesn't feel like yours. Terrifying. The good news is that we have some good treatments for it. And I have a lot of empathy for folks who have so much fear, who have such a big response, right, to this idea that that could happen to young people. Unfortunately, they may be going the way of trying to ban care so that we can pretend it doesn't happen and pretend it doesn't exist, right. But it does. It does happen and it does exist. And we do know that when young folks are able to access care that they do so much better. Absolutely.
It's just transgendered folk have existed through all of recorded human history. I've made this point again and again. And wishing it were otherwise does not make it so. It simply undermines people's human dignity. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Kate Smith, folks, she is the director of LGBTQIA+ policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. It was a real pleasure to speak with you this afternoon. I hope to do it again sometime soon. Everybody, keep it locked. We're going to talk a little bit about the breaking news in Syria, as well as some breaking news about the Madison Teachers Union, all coming up next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.